I just want to say a couple of words. First of all, that I feel very honored tonight even to be here. About a week ago, I talked with Nancy briefly, and she said to me, "Oh, you know me, Paul. I just like to sit in the corner. I don't like any of this hoopla." And I think that's precisely why we all love Nancy. And I've heard it said in here for the past few weeks, and I want to say it aloud for all of us to Nancy, that we wish you the best for your 50th, and we want you to know that this celebration is as much for us a celebration of our hope as it is for you. And I give you Nancy.
Everybody can hear me. Thank you ever so much. We're all going to share this, okay? I was so, you know, a week ago when I talked to Paul, I thought, I can't take this. It's just too much, and what if it goes to my head? So I said to my higher power, just get ready to take a bow next Saturday on October 1st. And because he is the one that has guided me and taken care of me all through these years, one day at a time. And all of you, I think it's time for you to take a bow, because without you, I don't think I could have done it. I know I couldn't have done it. So my name is Nancy, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. And there are several people here tonight who could tell my story better than I can, because they've heard it so often. But, you know, bear with me, because I've been telling the same story for 50 years. And that isn't the easiest thing to do. First, before I talk, I would like to thank everybody that gave me that wonderful party. I enjoyed it so much. So many people said, "You're not getting tired, are you?" I said, "No, I could take several of these in a row. I just love it. Just love it." And I'm so grateful to the people that worked so hard to put it on, and to all of you for coming. It was just so nice. And to all of you here tonight. I went to a workshop, the Sister B. You just can't stop working, huh? I went to a workshop that Sister B put on, and she expected 20, and there were 70, right? And she said, "Boy, God is showing off big time today." So I thought, woo, tonight when I looked around, I thought, woo, if he was showing off big time with 70, what about here? God, he really is showing off big time tonight. So here I am. One day at a time, I have reached the 50-year mark here. And there's a lonely little L on this here that says, you know, 50 years. My story is a very simple one, and not too interesting. I could make it more interesting by going out and really ripping up a few rugs, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to ask you to be satisfied with what you see. I had my first drink when I was 14 years of age. I had my last drink when I was 31, and I am now 81. So... when I came into AA, I said, you know, they said, "You have your whole life in front of you, Nancy." And I said, "That's the problem. What am I supposed to do from here on in? Just sit around and listen to the grass grow? And I can't stay sober for the rest of my life." And they said, "No, don't try to do that. Just try to stay sober one day today. And when you wake up tomorrow, tonight, thank God for today's sobriety, and when you wake up tomorrow, thank him, you know, for taking care of you today, and ask him if he will take care of you. And then at night, say thank you. So I thought, this is ridiculous. I mean, he has, you know, like, there's big things going on in the world. Why would he be interested in me staying sober? So I thought, well, I'll do it because, you know, there were six in this group that I went into, and they were all seemed to be quite sober and contented. And I thought, they know what they're doing. So I did. I thank God for that day's sobriety and told him I didn't really feel like having a drink that day, but thanks anyhow. And the next morning, I asked him to help me. And I got very, very thirsty, and I went to a meeting that night, and I said, you know something? I was thirsty all day today, and if I can stay sober on a day like today, practicing this program and just living in the now, I could stay sober till I'm 80. And you know I'm 81. I'm 1 year over my own predicament. Predicament or that was a slip. So anyhow, so my drinking, as I say, was not sensational. When I was 16, my father and mother didn't drink, but they at Christmas time they put in a big supply. Can you hear me in the back? Okay. They said, what if the lights go out, you know, and there's no... I said, well, I'll yell. So they didn't put in... they didn't drink, but they put in a supply of wine for the holidays. And I was 16. And I went downstairs, took down a bottle of wine, sat on the floor, and killed the bottle. Just drank the bottle. And there were chairs there. And there were glasses there, but that didn't matter to me. So the next day I had a stomach ache, and they took me to the hospital and took out my appendix. Now I told them that it was the wine. And it killed my Christmas holidays for me. And you know, right now, they talk about resentment. I still resent that. They had no right to take out my appendix. And I had a beautiful wardrobe. I had a silver slippers and a silver dress with blue tulle. And, oh, I can still remember all the things. But that's the way it was. From my 16th to my 18th birthday, I wouldn't make it into AA. But I drank on all kinds of occasions and had a ball. Christmas, Easter, you know, 4th of July, St. Patrick's Day. I kind of filled in on all of those things. But you wouldn't call it, you know, real alcoholic drinking. By the time I was 18, though, I was a steady daily drinker. And I loved to drink. I just loved it. I thought it was wonderful. And, of course, for 5 years, I just had a ball. But they wouldn't let me talk about it at the meetings because they said it made everybody thirsty. So they said, just, you know, cool it. Just don't talk about that. But, you see, when things... I never needed a reason or an excuse to drink. Like, my Uncle Willie died, and I didn't drink because Uncle Willie died. I was drinking when Uncle Willie died. And all of the events in my life, I was drinking when. So, and it was always that next drink. It was always that next drink that meant a lot to me. Oh, God, boy. The drink I was drinking wasn't that important, just the drink that was coming up. And I married a man at 20 who was a heavy drinker. And he was a golfer. And the reason I know he was a heavy drinker, and I was an alcoholic, but I didn't know that at the time, is that he never let drinking interfere with his golf. And I never let golf interfere with my drinking. And he belonged to three clubs, and I belonged to three bars. And it was just fine. And one month I decided I was drinking too much, so I decided that I would forge his name on every other check. So I did, and at the end of the month, he never did this, but he went over all the tabs, and his stack was like that, and mine was like that, you know. And he said, "Oh, Lord, I'm drinking too much." So he stopped. And that was the end of my forgery. I have never forged anything since. But things would happen to me, but I just took them in my stride. He took them in his stride. I would go this one time. I went off into a lot. And could have been a precipice, you know, but it was a lot. And I was furious because it was a muddy lot, and I got out of the car. I couldn't get out of it. Couldn't get the car out of the lot. But I ruined a new pair of shoes. So I was furious about that, and I called my husband. He said, "Just leave it there. We'll get it out tomorrow." He was out of town. "And I'll be home tomorrow. We'll get it out." In the same way, he was very, very easy with these things. He never criticized my drinking. I was a good drinking buddy for him. He would not tolerate complaints. He would not tolerate complaints. So I didn't complain. But I knew better than that. But the thing that I liked the most about him was he always had one drink on the way. There was always one drink on the way. And I've had people say to me, "Well, I married my supplier." Well, what did I? So did I. He was wonderful. And I mean, I don't know. I consider myself the most fortunate woman in the world. But I had a sister who didn't think I was the most fortunate woman in the world. She had eight children. And she was asthmatic. And she wanted me to come to the hospital this day because she was dying. And I went to see her, and she said, "Well, Nancy, I want you to raise my children, but," she said, "there's just one thing you're going to have to do, and that is you're going to have to stop drinking." And I said, "Well, Catherine, if I never took a drink in my life and somebody propositioned me to raise eight kids, I'd start." So, and she laughed so hard, and there was a lot of congestion. She took care of all the congestion. She was in a Catholic hospital, and the nuns are all running around saying, "It's a miracle, it's a miracle." I said, "No, it's me. I did that. I did that." And incidentally, she lived till she was 82, so you can. But she was something else again. So she wanted to get, she wouldn't get off my back. She wanted me sober, that's all. So I knew I had a problem, okay? Didn't know what to call it. But then nobody knew what to call it back there in 44. But I did. I had a problem. I knew, for instance, I would wake up in the middle of the night and I'd need a few drinks to go back to sleep again. And when I came into AA, I asked this man, I said, "Do you understand that?" He said, "Yeah, I understand it because that's what I did, but I didn't wake up and go to sleep. I came to and passed out." And I said, "That's very vulgar. Don't talk like that." So, I don't know. So, but I was not in denial about, for instance, I knew that drinking in bed was not social drinking. And when I couldn't stand up, I would lie down. So there you go. And I happened to be lying down drinking this day, and I called my sister. I used a system with her And that is, every day we talked, and she was about 20 minutes away from me. She lived 20 minutes away from me. And I'd say, "Hiya, Katie, how you doing?" and like that. But when I thought I had too much on board and I wanted to disguise it, not let her know about it, I'd use an English accent. And I would say, "Catherine, darling, how are you?" And she'd say, "Oh, my God, she's drunk." So she came down to the house this day when I gave her the English accent. And she had a chocolate cake. And she had seen this doctor. And the doctor had said that alcoholics don't really want alcohol. They want sugar. So she baked this cake. And she came down, and I was upstairs in bed drinking, and she said, "If you would eat a piece of this cake, I'll go home." She knew I didn't want it. And I couldn't eat the cake. I mean, that's ridiculous. How can you eat a piece of cake? So someone asked me, they said, "What'd you do with the cake?" I said, "I put it under the bed." So she said, she asked me to eat the piece of cake, and I said, "No, I won't do that." But I said, "I'll tell you what I will do. If you'll hand me the Manhattan Directory, there's an outfit in New York, and they have the beat on this thing, on this drinking thing." And I don't know. 5 years before, I had read something in a paper, and this woman was had her head on the table, and she had long black hair down there, and there was a baby on the floor playing with an empty bottle. And I looked at that picture and I said, "Thank God I don't have long black hair." So this was the one. I think they call that rationalization, but I didn't know those names. I didn't know what to call it. So anyhow, she handed me the directory, but she said, "You really don't have to do that. My husband's best friend belongs to AA, and will you see him?" And I said, "Well, I'd be delighted to see him." And that's one of the biggest lies I've ever told, because I didn't want to, you know, I wanted to drink and get her out of the way. Well, I made a stab at it. I got out of bed, showered, dressed, put on a ton of makeup, drank a gallon of coffee. You know what we do, anything to try to look good, got dressed, and he didn't show. And he didn't show the following day. And the third day I called her up and I said, "Where is the genius that's going to stop my drinking?" And she said, "He's talking it over with the fellowship, his, you know, his friends in AA, to see if you qualify." And I have a terrible temper, terrible. I blew sky high on that one. And he never did come over. I think she must have called and said, "Don't go near her, she's violent." Because he never did call. But he sent his son over with the book in a brown paper bag. So I read the book from cover to cover, and believe me, I was on every page, and I knew it, and I read the stories in the back, and I knew, yeah, this is where I belong. But I wasn't ready. So I put it behind the logs in the fireplace and went on drinking. That fall, as a matter of fact, just a little bit before this time, and I called him, I called this man, and I said, "Why am I drinking? I read the book. I know everything that's in the book. I know everything about alcoholism. So why am I drinking?" And he never answered that question. He said, "Would you like to go to a meeting?" I said, "Well, what are they like?" He said, "Well, there are people there that are just like you. They're alcoholic, and they're very nice people." I said, "Well, what do they look like?" And he said, "Well, they look like you." And I said, "But they must be gorgeous." And he was looking, of course, for humility. He was looking into the wrong woman. So, what did I do then? Oh, yeah. I went to the meeting, and that was That they say we win by attraction. I tell you, I just thought they were the most wonderful. There were six men in this meeting. There were three lawyers and a butcher and a cop and a man who worked in a malt factory, and he claimed the malt went into his pores and that's why he couldn't stay sober. So we got him another job, you know. That was easy. But they were wonderful, just wonderful. And I just loved them. I thought they were marvelous. So I said, look, you're all much too nice to have to stay sober. So I'm going to find a way for us all to get up with your expertise and, you know, my great mind. I'm going to get you all out of this thing. We'll all come out free. I won't promise you more than a fifth a day, but I'll get you at least a fifth a day if you give me 3 months. So for 3 months, I went on a tour of, oh, it was a radius of about 100 miles. It was New York State, Jersey, Long Island, Connecticut, and Westchester County. And I went to all the meetings. And if I liked somebody, I liked their talk or something, I'd say, may I interview you? So I would interview them, and I was looking for the invisible line. And I figured if I found the invisible line, we could all walk back over it. So, and you know, I would discuss this with my fellow members at that time. And they would say, that's a wonderful idea, Nancy. Now, you're doing real good. Smart, you know. Cunning is more like it. Well, anyhow, at 3 months, I knew that I had failed. And I came up with two answers. The first answer was yes. I thought it was the 8th, 10th, or 12th drink that started me on the crusade for more, but I knew now that it was a first drink that opened the whole avenue of alcoholic drinking. And I also came to the conclusion that I would never be able to get back those first 5 years that I had such a good time, that it would get progressively worse. But still, I wasn't sure that I wanted to join AA, and I discussed it at a meeting this night, and I said, you know, I'm so young, I'm much too young to die. And I think I'll wait until I'm 40, because 40, you know, if you die, you die. So they all said, well, they didn't tell me, no, this was wrong. They said, well, put your car up on blocks. And, you know, don't do this and don't do that. They had so many things, so many suggestions, as they call them, for me, that I thought, you will never know how much you helped me, and I will never forget you as long as I live. And I went home, and I cried like a baby, and I don't ever cry. I fight. So I just cried and cried to think that I could help someone, you know. And I was new, but something struck up, you know, a feeling between us. And we have these two gifts, the gift of being sane, I would say, the gift of being sane, of knowing that it is a first drink, of knowing that it gets progressively worse, and one drink is going to set it off, and I lose everything. And to know that I call my sanity. And for that, there is no price anybody can pay. Nobody. I could never pay for that wonderful gift. And that's the first gift. And the second gift is the fact that we have a story and that we can help people. We're like an X-ray. In other diseases, they have X-rays. They can put it up on the wall and see just what's happening. we get up here, we tell our story, and maybe someone in the room will identify with my screwball thinking, you know, and think, if she can do it, well, then I can too. And, you know, 50 years is not keeping me sober. What's keeping me sober is the 11th step that I practice today, and I practice every day. It's my way of life, the 10th, the 11th, and the 12th. These are the three steps that I live by, and I love them. So you see, I think I've told you pretty much all that I can think of to tell you. I've done my half hour. And in closing, I would like to tell you that I'm saying this at all the meetings lately. I'm saying that if you will keep coming back to the meetings and live as long as I have, your chances of being as contented as I am are very good, because everybody that bugged me is gone.